Hello and welcome to a new episode of Realpolitik. I am your host, Firas Mahdad. In this episode, we're trying a little bit of a new format. We're going to break it up into two different segments. The first segment is about the acceleration that we are living in and how we are quickly shifting from the perma-crisis to the great emergency. And I'll explain what I mean by that in a moment. And the second one is I wanted to share a few of the lessons that I've learned over my years as an analyst, and I wanted to discuss those with you and get some of your feedback and your inputs. As usual, I invite you to comment. I invite you to tell me what you think I should cover, ask any questions, and I will be looking at those and coming back to you with things that you actually enjoy. The state of the world for the last few years has been really something of a bit of a perma-crisis. Wars in the Middle East, a war in Europe between Russia and Ukraine, the threat of a Chinese invasion of Taiwan, instability in Libya, the expansion of jihadi movements in the rest of Africa, and then the attempt by Russia and Turkey to kick out France and to stabilize the situation in Africa. And this has become a bit of a normal setting for us in the world where we expect that there is some kind of crisis going on somewhere, but really it doesn't end up impacting in Europe and in America. It doesn't end up impacting people's day-to-day lives. You can go to the grocery store, prices are more expensive, your wages are worth less. Things aren't doing particularly very well for you, but life continues to hum along with no actual major disruptions, not at the scale that you would be experiencing if you were living in Lebanon, if you were living in Libya, if you were living in Iran. Your life kind of continues at a normal pace. I think we're beginning to see this change, and we're moving from this distant perma-crisis that is affecting the world to something that is more impactful on people's daily lives in the West. And I'll want to take a step back and explain a little bit how we got here and what it means going forward. How did we get here, first of all? Well, the West was living in an amazing level of comfort after the end of the Cold War. There were no serious military threats. There was nothing to worry about except GDP, economic growth, tinkering a little bit with tax policies, adjusting welfare here and there, some terrorist attacks, very substantial terrorist attacks, but these get quickly brushed under the carpet in the spirit of don't look back in anger, multiculturalism will work one day, you just have to accept it. How does this affect you personally, mate? That kind of attitude of disregard towards the changes that are happening based on the idea that it isn't affecting you on a daily basis. During that period, the West went to war against Russia in the Balkans and in Chechnya and now in Ukraine. In the Balkans, the country of Yugoslavia was destroyed, partly due to the errors of its own leaders, but partly because NATO saw an opportunity to destroy the bastion of Russian influence in the Balkans, with the aim being to weaken Russia and integrate the Balkans fully into the Western sphere of influence. So we saw that crisis that ticked over in Bosnia. And during that time, you have to remember, Al-Qaeda, Saudi Arabia, Hezbollah, we're all working together against the Russians. We had the war in Chechnya, which was supported to some extent by the West and by Saudi Arabia, where jihadis based in Russia's Caucasus region went on a campaign aimed at carving out some kind of ethnic Muslim republics on the border between the Turkish sphere of influence and the Russian sphere of influence, and the idea being that this makes Russia a lot weaker, it threatens it with repeated invasions from the Caucasus, more instability, and could lead to its breakup. And in Ukraine, obviously, in 2014, I'm going to explore that in future episodes of Realpolitik. The West supported the overthrow of the pro-Russian government in Kiev through street protests. This triggered unrest in the Russian-majority regions of Ukraine. This led to a mini civil war that was then frozen and was reactivated with a full-scale Russian invasion. The effect of this series of crises on Russia was really to harden its position, to awaken a much stronger form of Russian nationalism, to get Putin to focus on more competent government. And the result of that was that Russia could challenge the entirety of the West as they armed Ukraine to the teeth. And Russia is now in a position where it's fighting the war in Ukraine and it's slowly winning. You never know how wars end. This is a lesson that we learn from history. Advances in the early stage of the war don't mean victory, and casualties aren't as important that people assume. Often the winning side takes more casualties than the losing side. So there's still a lot of gray there, but the result has been the awakening of Russia. In the Muslim world, what we are seeing is something similar. We spoke about the creation of the State of Israel. We spoke about how this fundamentally destabilized the Muslim world. We spoke about how these states in the Middle East were carved out, countries like Syria, Lebanon, Jordan, Iraq, that hadn't really existed in any form as nation states prior to the arrival of the Europeans. The brief 20-year period in which Europe was dominant in the Middle East really led to fundamentally different borders in the region. This sense of humiliation, especially at the hands of Israel, given the repeated Arab defeats in the, against Israel, ended up leading to what I'm beginning to refer to as the Great Islamic Awakening, where now you see that the Muslim world is no longer this broken shell that is looking to Europe to see how it advances. Rather, you're seeing countries like Egypt, Turkey, Saudi Arabia, Pakistan asserting an independent line against the West and saying that they are geopolitical players in their own right and that they are no longer concerned with what the West wants or with what the West thinks. Some of them, like Turkey, are working, and Pakistan, some of them like Turkey and Pakistan, are working very hard to reduce their dependence on the West. In Pakistan's case, this is coming with more dependence on China. In Turkey's case, this is coming with a lot more autonomy. And we're seeing Turkey and Pakistan cooperating with each other militarily. We see them working together to support Azerbaijan against Armenia. We see them, we see the Turks sending some of their ships to Pakistan to help Pakistan with any potential naval warfare against India. And we see a deepening level of technological cooperation that's intended to contain Iran. Iran has become an example for other Muslim countries in that it was the first one to have a level of autonomy in its military manufacturing. And it was the first one that showed that it could challenge the West. In the end, it wasn't successful in its attempt to export the revolution, but it did succeed in setting an example that said to the Muslim world, you can stand on your own two feet. You don't need to worry about the West, about what the West thinks. You can pursue autonomous strategy. And this is quite important. We see Muslim countries becoming a lot more assertive, Turkey making expansionist maritime claims and stating clearly that nothing in its near abroad, including in the Black Sea, in the Balkans, in the Middle East, in North Africa, and indeed even in other parts of in parts of sub-Saharan Africa, can be decided without Turkish inputs. Turkey is making itself a great power and is making itself a necessary power. China, obviously, is in the midst of a very dramatic rise. The United States outspends the next 9 or 10 countries in military terms. China outproduces the next 10 countries in manufacturing terms. So China's production, China's industrial output is equal or greater than the industrial output of the next 10 manufacturing powers put together. And that includes Germany, that includes the United States, Japan, South Korea, Vietnam, and other industrial powerhouses. China is now the world's greatest manufacturing power. It's clearly very assertive. And this came in response, in part, to Western challenge. From the Chinese perspective, they were humiliated at the hands of Westerners for a century. There were the Opium Wars, bits and pieces of China like Hong Kong and Macau, and the last one being Taiwan, were cleaved out of China with Western support. And the Chinese felt this massive sense of humiliation, and this led them to invest in themselves for pretty much a century in order to develop an authentic Chinese solution that allows them to stand up against the West. And the theme that I'm repeating here, the theme that I'm trying to get to here, is that these parts of the world, Russia and its sphere of influence, the Islamic world, and China, faced enormous challenges from the West. And they responded to these challenges by waking up to their own identity, by borrowing, stealing technology from the West, by, in China's case especially, benefiting massively from the West's economic greed and from the greed of Western oligarchs who pushed for the inclusion of China in the World Trade Organization and who pushed the United States to give China the most favored nation status, which allowed China to trade with the U.S. as any country would within the WTO rules. They used their humiliation in order to wake up, in order to rise to the challenge that they faced. It took different countries different time frames. So China, you know, the awakening began arguably with the war between the nationalists and the communists, which began in the 20s, continued through to 1949 through the Japanese invasion and the horrors of the Japanese invasion. After Mao's various revolutions, there came the great economic reform under Deng Xiaoping in 1979. And over the course of two generations, China went from a backwards country to an advanced manufacturing country. In the Middle East, it took more than a century, perhaps several centuries, two centuries. The humiliation of the Ottomans really began in the 1800s. It continued with the defeat of the Ottoman Empire after the First World War. They tried nationalism. They tried to find a way to westernize as much as they could. This ended with Islamists taking power in Turkey and focusing on developing autonomous Turkish capabilities and autonomous Turkish military industries in order to be able to confront the West and to force the West to treat them as an equal. Russia, we had the Bolshevik Revolution. We had the Soviet Union modernize at breakneck speed, at least in terms of industry and manufacturing. The Second World War saw the Soviets in control of Eastern Europe and chunk of the Balkans and the Baltic states, and Russia became a great superpower. This ended in 1990, and then Putin came back 10 years later and has been working on rebuilding Russia since then. So you see a very, very different time frames over which these countries, nations, empires, call them whatever you want, managed to find a way to stand on their own two feet, largely independently of the West. What's happening in the West is sort of the inverse. The crises that the West has, to some extent, benefited from, to some extent, exported, to some extent, contributed to, without taking away the agency of bad actors in any of these parts of the world, these crises are now beginning to affect the West. And we are heading towards moving from a state of permacrisis where the West is threatened by issues at its borders and by attacks on its own territories that the states of the West refuse to recognize as attacks, to the conflict shifting into the West itself. This is the big transformation that we're seeing now. And I want to sort of go over a couple of the ways that we see this. The West is afflicted with completely incoherent ideology. Instead of ideologies like communism that affected Russia and China, or secularism and Islamism that affected the Middle East, including nihilistic forms of Islamism like the jihadis, like the Wahhabis of Saudi Arabia, we have in the West this very extreme form of liberalism that sees British government websites place Western culture in scare quotes, implying that there is no such thing as Western culture. We see this idea that anybody from anywhere can instantly become European, American, British, whatever it is. No value given at all to the reality that different people are genuinely different. We see this loss of any sense of identity. In Turkey, we saw it with Atatürk trying to erase Turkey's Islamic identity and replace it with a Western identity. In the Arab-speaking parts of the Middle East, we saw it with the attempt to impose secularism and distance these societies from Islam. We saw the rise of Arab nationalism as a substitute for pan-Islamism and the disasters that this led to. In the West, it's sort of similar. There's nobody in government in the West really has a sense of what Western identity is. You have Angela Merkel removing German flags from the hands of her supporters to make sure that nobody does something patriotic. You have the insistence in all of Europe that recently arrived Middle Easterners or North Africans or Africans are just as Spanish or French or whatever as somebody who's been in that country for tens and hundreds of generations. In America, it's the same thing. The revolutionary idea of America that it's the place where all Europeans can go and integrate is being expanded in an unrecognizable fashion to say that, again, anybody from anywhere is now an American. It doesn't matter if they have statues to Hanuman or an Indian monkey god. They're just as American as the founding fathers. So there is this crisis of identity in the West that is very similar to the crises of identity that were felt in the Muslim world, that were felt in China or in Russia, as these nations attempted to transform their societies to compete with the West. Things have gone full circle. It was the Westerners who were the confident civilizing influence who could go and conquer the world, and now it's them who are being conquered. Now, the West isn't, to understand what the West is in a geopolitical sense, it is the American Empire and her satellites. That's what the West is right now. And so any crisis that affects America naturally ends up affecting the rest of the world. This is how it works. In the same way that the defeat of the Soviet Union means that the Russians' allies in the Balkans are going to get smashed by Russia's rivals, that's exactly what it is. If America is weakened, then all of the West is weakened because of the degree of economic, defense, and financial interdependency, and because at the end of the day, this is one culture. If America had been colonized by Indians or Japanese, it would be in no way recognizable, and all of Europe would see her as an enemy. So what's happening in America affects everybody, but the acceleration towards crisis, towards a great emergency, is really happening across the West. Now, what's the great emergency? What is an emergency or a big emergency? You end up in situations where a society becomes so ungovernable that the previous rules of the game are no longer adequate, and therefore somebody must take charge of executive power and impose his will and remake the constitution, the customs, the laws, the unseen things, the immaterial things that keep society functioning, and the material things, because it includes the military and it includes the bureaucracy, of course. But this is what the West is heading towards. So if you look around you, you will see, as of the time of the recording of this video, there are riots in Northern Ireland over the attempted rape of a young girl by Romanian migrants. There are riots in France over a football match, but also over Gaza, Palestine, the role of Islam, with the left doing everything that it can to side with the enemies of the West and the enemies of Western civilization in order to undermine it. You see, as I was recording this video, we learned that in Austria there has been a mass shooting. We don't know who the perpetrator is, and I won't speculate. But you've seen this pattern of steady terrorist attacks and the rising risk that this is going to trigger some kind of reaction similar to what we saw in Northern Ireland.
If you enjoyed this piece of premium content from the Lotus Eaters, head to our website where you can find more.